And the thing is, after all these years, I still look back with wonder.
Greetings, Wonderlings. I'm your host, Angela Bowen, and welcome to another episode of Looking Back on My Wonder Years of Wonder Years podcast. Today, I will be discussing Season 2, Episode 2, Our Miss White, which aired on December 8th, 1988. I hope you guys are ready for the weekend. Did you all have a wonderful week? Excuse me. I've been listening to a new podcast this week. It's called 3-Day Rental. It's got a two-person host where they talk about movies. They review movies. It's freaking hilarious. Has me laughing my butt off. I've pretty much since Monday gone through almost all of their episodes. I can't wait for them to put more up. You know, it's like so nice to be having something to laugh my butt off to at work, because it seriously makes the day go by quicker. Other than that, I've been busy working on my three podcasts: Punky Power, an unofficial Punky Brewster podcast, this podcast, the Wonder Years podcast, and my new podcast, which debuted on Wednesday, called Tea Time with Mr. Belvedere, a Mr. Belvedere podcast, which I did upload onto the Wonder Years podcast SoundCloud page for you guys to all listen to. So check it out if you haven't already. All right, well, I believe congratulations are in order for one Carlos Marin. Thank you, Carlos, again, for answering the weekly episode trivia question correctly. For Season 2, Episode 2, Our Miss White, which was the question in who did Kevin play in the production of Martin Luther King Jr.? And the answer was Robert Kennedy. Carlos, I'm once again making you an honorary Wonderling of the Week. Thanks again, Carlos, for playing. Alright, guys, let's get into Season 2, Episode 2, Our Miss White, which I said aired on December 8th, 1988. Sorry, I'm coughing a little bit here and there. In this episode, we see Kevin develop a crush on his teacher, Miss White, who convinces him to audition for the part of Robert Kennedy in a play she has written about Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement. Only he's having trouble getting her to see him as more than a seventh grader. Don't worry, guys, this does not result in a Mary Kay Letourneau situation. Thank goodness, because Kevin is too young to be a daddy. Speaking of, while I was searching how to spell her name properly, to my surprise yesterday, I saw the headline that their 12-year marriage, Mary Kay Letourneau and Vinny, I can't tell you how to pronounce his last name, their 12-year marriage has ended after beginning their relationship 20 years ago. And they have two daughters, a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old. Oh my gosh. And to think, he was like 12 or 13 when this all started, like over 21 years ago. I would have been like right around his age. I was in junior high. We start the episode in where else? School. It seems that's how we start most of these episodes lately, don't we? The kids are watching a film strip on Martin Luther King Jr., and the kids are very solemn, especially Miss White, who we see at the end of the film has tears in her eyes. Adult Kevin comes on to narrate that 1968 was a strange and passionate time. Things that had seemed impossible were happening all around us. The events of those days brought every emotion to the surface. We see Miss White dressed in white. She's dressed in white, by the way, looking very nice. She's got blue eyeshadow, big hoop earrings, a very pretty lady she is. And we can definitely get that from the expression on Kevin's face that he is smitten, no, in love, or maybe lust, with Miss White. She signals the end of the film and the lights and window come up. She stands in front of the class and tells them, "We certainly lost a great man last April, didn't we?" Kevin goes on about the many virtues of Miss White in his mind. Her sensitivity, her warmth, her intelligence. As we see the camera pan down over Miss White's voluptuous body and stopping on her chest. Yeah, his mind is already headed south of the border, it's clear to see. Distracted, he doesn't hear when Miss White calls on him, asking if he agrees with another student's opinion that Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech changed people's opinion on civil rights, and he tells her, yes, he does. She goes on to ask, how do you think it went on to change people's opinions? Kevin looks around, seeing nobody raise their hands, and raises his, and Miss White calls on him. I think it showed a lot of people that America couldn't be as great as a country as they wanted until everyone had equal rights. She smiles at him and tells him, very good, Kevin. Kevin's inner monologue goes on to tell us how much he enjoys the special attention she gives him, the way she cocks her head and looks him in the eye. Like he feels a connection between them. She goes on to ask, what other effect do you think the speech had on people? And Kevin again raises his hand and she calls on him. And he goes on to say how he feels that African Americans were viewed as a group that people didn't like, but after hearing the speech, they began to view them as people just like them. She gives him the look again, and then the bell rings and the kids get up to leave, but she has them sit back down because they have not officially been dismissed yet. That happened a lot, like when I was in junior high and high school, like the bell would ring and boom, we were like all up ready to stampede out the damn door. I mean, I know, I'm guilty as such. I was told to sit my butt down, too. She informs them that today is the last day to sign up for the fall play, and there are many key roles still open. And the kids, you know, they leave. They don't care. But she asks Kevin to stay behind and suggests that he try out, even though, you know, it's not his thing. He hates plays. I mean, we hear all of this going on in his mind. She tells him it's a play that's never been done before, and she actually wrote it. She tells him he'd be right for the role of Robert Kennedy because he has the right presence, and asks if he'll try out. He mulls it over in his mind, saying, you know, he hates plays, performing, fear of embarrassment on stage, and in the end, he throws up his hands and says, sure! She tells him, see you tomorrow, and he smiles and leaves. Now it's dinner time at the Arnold house, and Jack asks Kevin, you know, I thought you hated plays. Why do you want to be in a play all of a sudden? Makes me think that Jack's worried he'll have to actually go to it, and he doesn't seem big on social interaction outside of the house. Norma asks what the play is about, and Kevin tells her it's called The Times They Are A-Changin', a play about the civil rights movement. And I thought, you know, hey, I mean, that's just like the song by Bob Dylan, which, you know, I like that song. Jack says, whatever happened to My Fair Lady? That's a musical, Jack. You'd rather see Kevin in that play, not that there's anything wrong with it, of course. Karen butts in with, Dad, theater's supposed to be a form of political expression. Not always, Karen. Geez, Karen, does everything seriously have to be fucking politics with you? And Jack tells her, not when you're 12. Jack, I mean, I don't think politics has an age restriction, but, you know. Karen stands up saying, don't you understand? A play like this could really raise people's consciousness about racial oppression. Sheesh. Norma tells her to watch her tone with her father. And Wayne adds, yeah, and give me that potato if you're not going to eat it. Wayne grabbing it off her plate. Wow, well, we haven't seen Wayne since the season one finale Dance With Me, and even then he was only in that one scene where he was showing Kevin and Paul how to dance. Norma thinks it's wonderful, but then Kevin breaks the news that he has to rehearse every day until 5:30 and asks if Norma will be able to pick him up. But Norma tells him she's usually in the middle of fixing dinner at 5:30, and she asks Jack if he can pick Kevin up on the way home from school. Or on the way home from work. I'm sorry, guys. I meant Kevin's at school. Alright. Jack just asks Kevin again why he wants to be in a play. We hear Kevin's inner monologue asking himself why his dad can't understand that he's doing this play to get the attention of his 28-year-old teacher. She's 28? That's not too much younger than, I mean, Norma, who's got to be, what, maybe 35, maybe closer to 40? That's the main reason why, you know, I couldn't do any after school activities because I didn't have someone to come pick me up afterwards. My dad worked till about 6, and my grandma was usually fixing dinner right around, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock for my grandpa when he got home. Kevin asks his dad for clarification, and he says, okay. And Kevin's so excited, he pumps his arm in victory, like, yes! And the look on Jack's face is hilarious, like, he can see, you know, why this means so much to Kevin, who quickly just like, thanks. Now we're in the auditorium, and Miss White is going over the scene with Kevin as Robert Kennedy, telling him that in this particular scene, tensions were very high, and reminds Kevin of Robert Kennedy's, Robert Kennedy's personality, a very passionate and forceful man, and tells him to channel or feel that passion. Kevin looks so damn bored out of his mind. His chin is propped up by his hand, like he's really wishing he could reconsider his promise to perform in the play. She has them run through the scene again, with Paul sitting at the desk, so the setting is an office. One girl looks to be a secretary who Kevin walks up to, asking to see Mr. Hoover of the FBI. Kevin carries Robert Kennedy's accent very well. From the scene, it looks like Kevin as Robert Kennedy is telling Paul, who's playing J. Edgar Hoover, that the African Americans are fighting for their rights, and Hoover shouts back, "Are you telling me how to run my agency?" "All I'm saying is that we need to support Dr. King." And Hoover tells him that man is a threat, and Kennedy yells, "No, he is not! He's fighting for the cause of freedom," as he slams his hand down on the desk. Miss White comes over, placing her hands on his shoulders. Yeah, that's a big no-no there. Telling him it's wonderful and good anger. She also tells everyone else they're doing a good job as well. While her hands are still on Kevin's shoulders, and by the looks of it, he is loving every minute of this contact she's making with him. She tells them tomorrow they'll be rehearsing the town's meeting scene and for them to start learning their lines, and dismisses the students. Paul asks Kevin if he came off as unlikable, and Kevin informs him, "Well, you're playing J. Edgar Hoover, and he's supposed to be unlikable." Paul tells him he knows that Miss White said he should find the complexity in the man, and Paul walks away repeating, "This man is a threat to the American way of life," over and over in different ways, just trying to get the context of it. Guys, I'm learning literally when I was watching this episode, I was learning so much. I love history like this. I wasn't around for this time, so it's interesting to kind of see how crap went down back then. I didn't learn any of this in my classes, you know. I didn't study it, you know. Mostly I was studying the American Revolution, the Civil War. In high school, it was the branches of government where we watched Footloose when I was a senior. This history just fascinates me so much because I don't know much about it and all the changes that took place during this time. Kevin walks over to Miss White's desk and tells her, using Karen's line from dinner the previous night, about how he thinks this play can really raise people's consciousness about racial oppression. She asks him if he really thinks that, because that was her hope when she wrote the play. He tells her, yeah, he thinks that he's always thought of theater as a way of political expression. She tells him that's remarkable because so few 12-year-olds do. Kevin says, I know, most 12-year-olds are so superficial. She agrees by saying, yes, they are. This makes me wonder of today's 12-year-olds and how they feel about what's currently going on right now in the world. On my drive home from work last night, I thought of something, you know, about how much of a stickler that Mr. DePerna is. And, you know, being he's the assistant principal, I don't think you'll ever see the actual principal of the school, am I right? Well, I'm kind of surprised that he let her do a play about civil rights, because he seems like the kind of guy who would shut any type of that kind of stuff down. Like when the kids plan to do a walkout coming up later on in the walkout episode, although that was in protest of Vietnam, which I can see how he would not want to allow that. Kevin's inner monologue tells how he thinks she doesn't see him as an ordinary seventh grader. She sees him as a man who understood things like democracy and social injustice, a man who understood her deepest thoughts and feelings, a man who's getting picked up by his father as Jack comes walking into the auditorium. Slow your roll there, Kev. She does not see you as a man. She just sees you as a student. One who she enjoys discussing worldly political views with. And nothing more. Miss White asks if that's Kevin's father. And Kevin says yes. Jack smiles as he introduces himself. While shaking her hand, she introduces herself as Diane White. Aw, look. Aw, he smiled. You rarely see Jack smile on the show, I'm telling you. So it's kind of a fun surprise. Like, oh, he can smile. Kevin's surprised by her first name, Diane. Internally arguing that it doesn't fit because to him, she was more, you know, Miss White to him. He doesn't really see her as anything else. Well, Kevin, that's probably because you see her as a teacher and not as an actual person who's just working at a job and has a life outside of school. I know I felt that way when I was young. The idea of a teacher being someone other than a teacher outside of school was preposterous to me. I remember when I first learned my second grade teacher's first name, and it was like I was seeing my teacher as someone who was more than just a teacher. And he was a really cool teacher. I'm not telling you his name either, because he still has his profession. He's not a teacher anymore, but let's just say he moved up in the world. So he's doing a lot much more than what he did when he was a teacher, which, even though he was really cool. Alright, she tells Jack that Kevin is an extraordinary young man, and it's a pleasure to have him in my class, and of course in the play. Jack agrees, yeah, he's a good kid. You see Kevin standing there nervously, getting more uncomfortable and frustrated by the minute. Like his dad is killing his one shot he had at impressing Miss White by referring to him as a kid. She tells Jack that Kevin is a natural actor. Yeah, that's funny, because I always thought he hated acting, Jack informs her. Kevin's mentally pushing Jack out the door before he embarrasses Kevin any further. Really? Miss White is surprised, and Jack tells her how in fourth grade, Kevin... You remember this, right? Don't you? And he goes on to say how Kevin played Winnie the Pooh. Really? Winnie the fucking Pooh in fourth grade? Isn't that a little too old then? I mean, that sounds better suited for, like, my kindergarten, second grade tops. Kevin keeps running his hand through his hair, stressing out, and he's on the looks of a breakdown. As Jack continues the story, how right in the middle of Winnie the Pooh's conversation to Piglet, in front of the whole school, his suit rips down the back. So, Jack, ready to go? Kevin shouts at Jack to keep him from further embarrassing him, and both Miss White and Jack stop talking and turn to look at him in surprise. I've never called my dad by his first name to his face. Oh, hold on a second, guys. I can't even call Jeremy's mom by her first name because it makes me uncomfortable. Plus, you know, I have an Aunt Janice, so that makes it super weird for me. Because that's Jeremy's mom's first name. I don't know, I have an aversion to that. I remember when I was in third grade how my reading, I was in an out-reading class, and the teacher there, like, stopped teaching the class because I wasn't able, I was really shy. And I think that personal level addressing someone like that to their face made me very uncomfortable. But she literally stopped the class until I did address her like that. She's like, say my name. And I'm thinking, that's sometimes too hard for me. Kevin quickly corrects himself, saying, I mean, Dad. Mr. Dad. Sir. In the next scene, we've progressed along in the week to the point now it's the end of the week in rehearsals, and Kevin internally mentions how something was bugging him. And we see Kevin lazily delivering his lines like he gives no fucks in the world. All the while doing this, he's tossing his hands about at his sides like the damn kid from the live version of The Jungle Book that came out last year, who was tossing his hands up as he was talking, and it was so damn irritating. Kind of like that. Seriously, Kevin, stop talking with your hands. Stop being a jerk about this. You're wasting everyone's time, especially Miss White's. He's just worried because she hasn't given him the quote-unquote look, head tilt slash smile, all week. Then we see Jack, and for a second I look at him like, what's he doing? Oh, he's supposed to be picking him up. That's right. Oh, I forgot. She gets up shaking Jack's hand, and Kevin asks if that was, you know, Miss White, was that okay? And, she tells him, she looks back at her students and says, very good. That's it for today. And then she turns back around, continues talking to Jack. I bet she just wants some adult conversation. She's around kids all damn day, 40 hours a week. She needs a break for sanity's sake to talk to another human being around her age. We get Kevin's inner monologue about how he thinks his dad is telling her about the time at Ocean City when that tidal wave pulled his bathing suit off, or the time at Funland when he threw up on the cup and saucer ride. So I take it Funland is just like, don't have the right to say Disneyland, so I'll say Funland. Instead, he hears Jack tell her how he spent 2 years in Korea, and Jack thinks to himself how Jack never spent 2 years in Korea. Kevin, your dad's being a typical guy right now, okay? Like a peacock fluffing up his feathers, impress a female, he's bragging a little bit, Everyone else has heard the story. She's never heard the story. Let him tell the story, right? He tells her how he got some shrapnel in his leg, but he didn't think that the lymph was noticeable anymore. She tells him it's hardly barely at all noticeable. And Jack goes on to say how a lot of his buddies never made it out of the war. Miss White tells him how war is a terrible thing, isn't it? Kevin interrupts, asking Miss White, "Was I okay today?" And she tells him he was fine. She asks Jack if the experience haunts him, and he nervously tells her, "Well, sure, I think about it every now and then." She really wants to know all about it, delving into his psyche and all. Is it even appropriate to ask someone that? I mean, I was aware that you're not really supposed to ask them what went on over there, because they can't talk about it because of what it does to people. I've never lived that. Or maybe it just depends on the person, if they're comfortable. Maybe that's just a now thing. I'm not sure. Jack tells her it's only natural that nothing's quite the same after going through something like that. Kevin gets angry when he sees Miss White give Jack the look he thought was only meant for him. "Dad, let's go," Kevin whines. "Great, Kevin. Now you know what you look like? A whiny little kid." Granted, I was guilty of this when I was a kid. I was always impatient when my dad was talking to someone and I wanted to go, but I usually would just honk the horn several times. I'm not proud to say I was doing this back when I was Kevin's age, but I was. Now Kevin and Jack are home. They're in the backyard, tossed around the baseball, and Kevin's getting ready to throw to his father, and Kevin's inner monologue tells us how there's two kinds of logic. There's logic and 12-year-old in love logic, and how everything had been going great with Miss White until Dad entered the picture. Well, until his dad entered the picture. Jack tells Kevin, "Ball two," and Kevin says, "What?" And his dad tells him it was too high, and Kevin argues, "It was not." Yeah, I can see it now. Kevin's taking his frustrations out on Jack over his feelings for Miss White, although to be honest, Kevin's always been kind of a hothead since day one. So I don't expect any less from him, especially here. He's blinded by rage and unrequited love. Not a good combo to have when you're tossing around the old baseball back and forth with your dad. This reminds me of the time my dad attempted to make a homemade baseball bat out of a large tree limb and proceeded to demonstrate how good it worked. He'd throw a ball in the air with one hand, he'd take the bat, and boosh! He's like, "Arr!" That's just so funny. Just my dad would make these homemade things. Like, "I don't need to buy a bat, I'll just make one out of wood." My dad was all about making things out of virtually nothing. In fact, I even tried to make my own nunchucks after seeing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles out of baler twine and some little tree limbs stuck together. I'm sure I injured myself many times. Kevin's hatred at his father's supposed moving in on his relationship with Miss White shows in Kevin's next pitch when he winds up and hammers it hard into Jack's glove, who feels that hit with a noticeable ow and look of surprise. Damn it, Kevin! Stop hurting your dad! He doesn't deserve your piss-poor attitude just because you're jealous. Jack sees his change in Kevin's stature and asks Kevin, chuckling a little, what are you trying to do, break my hand? Kevin throws a temper tantrum slash hissy fit as well as his glove on the ground and tells him that was a strike and so was the last one. Okay, so Kevin was the pitcher, Jack was the catcher, gotcha. Like, they're throwing the old ball back and forth, like, okay. Striking out a batter, Jack was a catcher, calling strikes or outs or balls or whatever baseball lingo jargon they're tossing around. As you can probably tell, I don't watch much baseball, but I did catch the Cubs winning the World Series last November, like the tail end of it. I just was like, hurry up, hurry. It's, you know, well past 11 o'clock. It's like, okay, we're all going to bed. Hurry this up. Let's go, 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 go. They win. I see it. History in the making. I wanted to witness it. What's the matter with you? Jack asks, surprised as Kevin's outburst, who shouts back, nothing! Heading back inside. Jack does not deserve that at all. He should have said, you know, fine. I got another son. I'll just go hang out with him then. Back in the auditorium, we see Kevin delivering his lines like he still does not give two fucks, throwing in a lot of, if I were Miss White, I would have been on his ass about this. Like, Kevin, I do not have time for this right now. The play is this week. In fact, actually, I learned later, it's fucking tomorrow. You should know your lines perfectly. What is going on? Paul continues on with his line, and Miss White comes up on stage asking Kevin if he needs to go over his lines. Or is something wrong? Kevin asks if he can make a phone call. She says, well, sure, and then tells everyone to take five. Outside the school, Kevin is at a payphone. We really don't see those. Those are like non-frickin' existent now, aren't they? And calls Jack at work, telling him he doesn't need a ride, that he's got one. Ah, so he's concocting a plan to get a ride from his teacher. He tells his dad he'll see him at home as the rest of the cast files out of the auditorium. Kevin's sitting in one of the chairs with his chin in his hands as Miss White walks by and stops, asking him, you know, if his father's coming to pick him up. And he just shakes his head, and she asks how he's getting home, and he says, walk, I guess. She offers to give him a lift home. Miss White has this cute, I don't know, I think either it's white or it's like a light blue, almost white, VW bug. It's so cute and perfect for a school teacher. As she's driving him home, we hear the song Just My Imagination playing in the background, and it really flows with the scene. She pulls up in front of Kevin's house, saying, here we are. Kevin mumbles, yeah, here we are. She's looking at Kevin like, will you please get out of my car? This is seriously awkward enough. Like, what are you waiting for? We hear Kevin's inner thoughts, how he wanted something to happen, but he didn't know what, and how he couldn't leave that car until something happened. And now we enter into his played-out fantasy of her asking when he has to be home. She turns around to face him, and we see her put her hand on his thigh, and he mumbles, Thanksgiving. I'm surprised we didn't get a voice crack. Snapping back to reality, we see her ask him if he's all right. Yeah, I'm fine, he assures her. She tells him to get a good night's sleep because tomorrow's the big day. Are you kidding me? Tomorrow's the play and Kevin was dicking around with his lines earlier? Well, he better be ready to go then when he's on stage. Yeah, I guess we won't be seeing each other that much anymore, he admits. At least not professionally, he quickly adds. No, I guess we won't, she agrees. There's still English class, though. You can't get out of that so easily, she tells him jokingly. Feeling his moment slip away, he looks at her, smiles, and shyly tells her, "Miss White, you're pretty." Oh, Kevin, buddy, don't say that. That is a line you don't want to cross, compliment or not, but she thanks him all the same. I guess it was acceptable to say that back then. Now, you don't want to even go down that road. Don't even compliment someone on the teacher on their looks. She asks if there's anything he wants to talk about. That's when we hear Kevin's inner voice admit he doesn't want to talk. He wants to take her in his arms and kiss her on the lips. That he wanted it so bad he thought he would explode. How did she not know the possible erection he's probably getting? Wondering why he doesn't try to make his move, being she's only 2 feet away from him. Her being a woman and he being, and that's when he realized that as if looking down on himself from above, Miss White in the car and seeing just how ridiculous he was being. She being a woman and him a 12-year-old boy. Norma calls out the door of the house asking Kevin if that's him in the car and lets him know dinner's almost ready. And that breaks the spell. He turns to her and tells her he's got to go and says goodbye. Exits the car and she drives off. That night of the play has arrived and we see Kevin backstage waiting to go on as we hear Dr. King's famous speech, "I Have a Dream." While waiting, we hear Kevin's inner thoughts thinking back on the time back in the classroom when he first fell in love with Miss White, when she cried after Dr. King's speech, and how that made him feel, and how in his heart he truly believed she loved him too. It wasn't something that could be a part of real life. But that doesn't mean it wasn't there. Paul comes up to him and asks if he's ready, that he's almost on, and we see Kevin's face struck by a powerful emotion whirling around inside of him. Paul asks Kevin, "What's the matter?" And Kevin looks to be on the verge of tears. We can actually see a tear escaping his eye and slowly rolling down his cheek. The boy playing Dr. King looks to Kevin and nods him forward as he exits the stage and Paul tells him, he's up, pushing him into the spotlight. He stands there wiping away a tear, and we see the audience waiting in anticipation, and Kevin looks off stage for encouragement. And that's when we see Miss White come forth, waiting in the wings, nodding to him to continue. Kevin starts his speech. "I see a more compassionate America, a nation in which all people, black, white, and brown, have an opportunity to build a better life for their children. A nation in which all people can live free of oppression and violence. Our answer is the world's hope. It is to rely on youth." And then, you know, it continues on, but then we hear Kevin's inner monologue kind of playing over top. We see in the audience Norma grabbing Jack's arm in support, and Jack looking on stoically, Karen listening intently, and Wayne, of course, taking a nap. He reminds me of Uncle Frank in Home Alone 2 during Kevin McAllister's recital. Adult Kevin comes on to narrate how he doesn't remember how he got through that speech. He just remembers the hurt, all the anger, all the disappointment, and all the love that fused together that surged through his 12-year-old body as he delivered it. He concludes his speech by saying, "Some men see things as they are and ask why. I see things as they might be and ask why not." This concludes the play, and everyone claps. Let me tell you guys, as I was writing this earlier, tears were literally, as they're coming out of my eyes right now. With the world the way it is, it scares me so much to see how we as a country have fallen since that time period. All the death that has been going on, especially lately, with the events in the UK, with Manchester and London, and as well as here in the US, with what happened in Orlando, my heart breaks for them and for us. And now I ask these questions. What will become of us? How much more can we take before we say enough is enough? I'm sorry. I'm sorry to get emotional here about this. You guys, I've probably mentioned I am not a political person. I take what I can from what I see on the news and try to make much sense of it as I can. But that speech that he says, and just with everything else right now that's going on, it's just really hard to try to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I don't know what's going to happen. Things just keep getting worse and worse, and I just hope that one day something good maybe will come out of everything. There's a reason. I don't know. I just don't know. But, sorry. I'm going to continue on, okay? Kevin sees Miss White. Tears are streaming down her face as she claps and walks to... he walks to her, but suddenly stops when he sees a man rush up to her and kiss her passionately. My guess, he's her boyfriend or fiance, and the other kids rush Kevin back out onto the stage for a final bow. We see the audience clapping, and we see the Arnold family. Wayne is still sleeping. Wayne, seriously, wake the fuck up. Show respect for your brother. We hear the song The Times They Are A-Changin' by Bob Dylan play overhead. And we see Jack stand up and applaud. Yes! And the credits come on. That's the end of the episode, guys. Oh, I'm going to turn my timer off here so it doesn't beep. Time for my Flower Power episode rating. I'm giving it a full 5 out of 5 Flower Power petals. One, for Kevin's ending speech. It literally brought me to tears. You guys just heard me make a mess of myself. Number 2, Miss White making Jack smile. Number 3, the overall message of the play. Number 4, Kevin finally realizing his love for Miss White as a fantasy dream it really is. And 5, Jack's standing ovation to Kevin at the end. I cheered when I saw him stand up. My favorite song of this episode, there's only 2, Just My Imagination and The Times They Are A-Changin'. I picked The Times They Are A-Changin' by Bob Dylan that played at the end of the episode because that speaks so clearly of everything that was going on. I honestly wonder if someone were to write a song about what's going on right now, what that would be. Like, when 9/11 happened and those songs came out about what happened with the World Trade Center. Alan Jackson's Where Were You When the World Stopped Turning. I remember I was on the bus. I was already graduated. I was having the school bus was taking me to work and stuff. They were nice enough to do that. But I remember hearing that song on the radio and just, I felt so sad. Just everybody came together. Everybody came together at that time. I just hope that we're all, you know, coming together. We're banding together. You know, I see the things on Facebook, with Paris, with Manchester, London, all of those. We're all trying to, support you in any way we can. You know, prayers, whatever, we got to band together, guys. We got to band together and support each other in these times. Because if we don't, we're all going to fall apart. And we'll end up being useless. It's about togetherness, guys. The quote of the episode. It was a strange and passionate time. Some of our dreams dissolved into thin air. They also seem comical now, but some of our dreams are lasting and real. That played at the end of the episode. Probably right around the time before it faded to the credits. Alright, who was the worst this episode? Well, Kevin, of course, for being a dick to his dad when they were playing catch in the backyard, frustrated with jealous rage, throwing the ball hard into Jack's glove, causing him to wince in pain, and then Kevin throws a hissy fit, throwing his glove on the ground. He's getting the wedgie, the lowest on the scale. Fire Out Threads Award is going to go to Kevin for his suit in the play. He looked very dashing. My lesson learned from this episode. Never act on a crush, because it could end up badly for both you and the other person involved, especially if that person is an adult. Also, be open to listening to other people's views. You do not have to agree with them. Just be having an open mind. All right, here's a quick note. Next Friday, I will be skipping episode 3, the Christmas episode, and saving it for December. It's in my holiday rotation. I always, Christmas, strictly December. I will not watch anything Christmas related until then. Instead, I'll be doing episode 4, Steady As She Goes. We see Kevin attempting to make Winnie jealous, as it appears everyone in school is pairing off into coupledom. And we are introduced to one Becky Slater. All right, let's give a shout out to some new Wonderling listeners. We have Mountain View, California, Berwyn, Illinois, El Paso, Texas, Indianapolis, Indiana, Brooklyn, New York, and an international listener from Polska, Poland. And to all you other listeners out there, thanks again for listening. I want to give a sincere thank you to all the listeners out there, whether you listen to this podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud or any other listening platforms that you may use to hear this podcast. I love giving you episode recaps of The Wonder Years every Friday. As you join me as I go into full detail, as we reminisce of the days gone by with Kevin and his friends, Paul and Winnie, and the rest of the Arnold family as well. As giving occasional running commentary and childhood stories. To stay connected to the podcast, you can visit my many social media sites. Facebook page at Looking Back at my Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast. Instagram, LBOM Wonder Years podcast. Twitter, Wonder Years pod. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast, go to iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss an episode. Also, if you got friends that watch Wonder Years, you know, especially guys, it's on Netflix, so if you want to follow along with me, you surely can. Also, check my social media sites, which you can access using the links on my SoundCloud account on my Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast page. I also do listener and trivia questions, so if you would like a shout-out on the podcast, all you got to do is answer them. All right, well, until next time, happy Friday, have a great weekend, and peace out, Wonderlings, and I'll see you next Friday. Bye-bye.